Good morning. This is really weird. I have to tell you this. I pastored a long time, and I have never pastored in this situation. Actually, I'm quite glad I'm retired and not having to try to navigate this. I navigated over those 40-some years of ministry some interesting times. But I got to tell you, this is an interesting time. And I don't mean that in a good way. It's a challenge. It's a challenge to do church. Look at this. There's some of you here. There's some of you over there. There's the good thing about this building, you can actually put more people in it. There's some home. It's a strange, strange thing. But at the same time, I want to say good morning to all of you and welcome to worship. Pastor John and Pastor Rudy's focus the last couple of weeks has been family matters. And when John called me and asked me to take over for him today, he specifically told me that you don't have to do that because he's doing that. And he said, do whatever you want to do. That's really a dangerous thing to tell a preacher. Do whatever you want to do. But I thought I'd find something that kind of dovetailed with where he's been going, but not so much with family stuff, but just trying to give you folks something to help. Here's what I know about Pastor John and about Pastor Rudy and all of us who actually fill in here periodically. We have a desire for you when we stand up here and do this, and the desire is very simple, that you would experience a transformation of Jesus Christ. And that's really what it's about. It's not about us getting up here and, coming up with something really neat and whatever, because it isn't about us up here. It's about connecting you to God, and hopefully the Spirit will do that, and that you will find something that helps you for your weeks ahead. But one of the other things we know, those of us who stand up here, we know this, that what you hear on Sunday and what you may decide on Sunday and desire on Sunday, come Monday, it may not work out the way you hoped on Sunday. And there may be a disconnect between what you desire on Sunday and what you experience on Monday. Now, that's not a strange thing. I would tell you Paul understood that. Romans, the 7th chapter, verses 18 and 19, tell us an interesting story. These are Paul's words to us, and he said this, "For I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. For I do not do the good I want to do, but the evil I do not want to do, this I keep doing." So for Paul, there was this kind of disconnect, and I think there is for many of us, there sometimes is this disconnect. And so my desire today is to help reconcile your Sunday with your Monday. That's really what I want to do. So you don't come in here and have that kind of schizophrenic experience. I want to help you align your desires with your actions. And so that's what we're going to do today, or try to do this. Now, part of that is to address a bit of faulty theology that sometimes plagues us, and I want to give you a little bit of this. Our faulty theology is based on the belief that spiritual growth is linear and a steady progression from our initial experience of salvation to our arrival in heaven. It's like you've got this graph, and it starts over here, and it just is this nice, steady line. Now, I grew up in a holiness church, and in a holiness church, there was a lot of preaching around perfection. Now, it wasn't that it was wrong preaching, it just the expectation of that was that that's what it was. When you got saved and you became a Christian, you started on a journey that just went, but the truth of the matter is, I didn't really see a lot of that. And there were a lot of contortions that people went through to try to explain why some bad behavior really was approved of God. And it also was one of the most detrimental things to personally to my own spiritual growth, is because, now this is terrible theology, but I'm going to tell you this. I got saved probably 1,000 times. In my early years of walking with God, I thought every time that I fell and stumbled, I was totally lost. That's just that's part of the warped theology that I picked up. It's not, you know, I'm not condemning the people who preached. My hearing wasn't always that good. What I was hearing and interpreting in here made me feel like any time I failed, I was lost. And so because I was lost, then I had to go through a whole thing and start all over again. So I was always going back to the start, back to the start, back to the start. I hope that's not been your experience, but if it has been, I want to give you a little hope here today. It doesn't have to be. And that's not how God works with us. But the reality is, we can end up awfully discouraged if we have this idea that our growth is always going to be like this. The truth of the matter is, in this spiritual journey that we have of life, we have lots of ups and downs. We have sometimes 3 steps forward and 2 back, and sometimes 2 forward and 3 back. It's just part of what we experience in this world around us. And we have to remember, we have an enemy who works on us, and sometimes we work on us. But at the same time, we have a God who works with us. So to understand our spiritual journey better, I want to take you on a trip this morning. I want to take you on a boat ride. Now, we're in the Shuswap. So boat rides are, hopefully for you, a common thing. I live literally on the lake. So, going on a boat ride is not an uncommon thing. But I want to go on a boat ride today with Peter and the disciples. Now, it became an interesting boat ride because it happened in the middle of the night, and in the middle of the night, they encountered Jesus in this boat ride. And I want to read this story. It's one that probably, if you know the scripture, you'll be familiar with this. I want you to go to Matthew, the 14th chapter, verses 22 through 33, and I want to read this to you. And this is about this journey, this boat ride. It says, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into, by the way, notice this, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. Wouldn't you have been? It's a little strange. It's a ghost, they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. Lord, if it's you, Peter replied, tell me to come to you on the water. Come, he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to sink, cried out, Lord, save me. Immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You of little faith, he said, why did you doubt? And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. That's quite a passage when you think about that, the things that happened there. Now, I want you to catch this first of all. What Peter discovered as he walked with Jesus on the water was that we are transformed more by sinking than by walking. I want you to think about this a little bit. Reading the account, we see that Peter sank. If you look at verses 29 and 30 of this 14th chapter of Matthew, we read this. Then Peter got out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to sink, cried out. Now, before we get to, you know, come down too hard on Peter, let's remember this. Only Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water, and he did walk on the water. Only Peter was the one who called out to Jesus and said, invite me out there with you. Only Peter. The rest of them stayed in the boat. But what happens to Peter when he steps out is, and I've seen this, you know, like living on the lake, I tell you, sometimes when the wind comes up here, have you ever seen the waves so high that the wind blows the water off the tops of the waves and you get the sheet of, it doesn't have to be raining, but it's like raining sideways. I think it's like that for Peter that day. Peter steps out, all's good for a moment. He's focused on Jesus. That's where his focus needed to be for him to even accomplish this. And then he gets slapped in the side of the face with a wave or the spray. His eyes get filled with water. He loses his focus, and then what happens? That water that had been because of Jesus for him, just like a rock, now becomes like water. Have you ever tried to walk on water? You can try it. You're going to swim. Now, I will tell you this. When I was a young child, I remember hearing this passage, and I thought if I had enough faith, I should be able to walk on water. And so I remember going out on a dock and praying. Yeah, okay, it sounds stupid, but I did this. Praying, Jesus, I really do believe in you. And I believe if Peter could do that, I can do that. And I stepped off, and guess what happened? I walked 15 feet on water, under the water. I didn't sploop. That's what happened. Well, let me bring this closer to home for you. Have you ever felt God calling you to take a step of faith and do something that really was kind of out there on the edge? And you did that? You took that step of faith? But then once you got into it, all of a sudden you got frightened and you realized this is bigger than you and you can't do this? And you start to sink, and you call out. You cry out. Now, I've had this experience, and I expect some of you have had this too. But here's what I know. Spiritual growth and transformation often comes about when we fail. And calling out to Jesus, we discover that He is faithful. We discover that in those moments. In those moments when we're over our head in the water or circumstances of life or whatever is going on, in those moments, that's the place where we learn to trust Him. That's the place we learn that He actually does come through, and we discover that He is still with us in the storms of life. When I think back over my life, man, I've had storms. It's not always been easy. Knowing lots of loss, lots of pain. Some just because I live in a broken world, and some because I've made some dumb choices. And in those times, I have discovered that there's only one who is consistently there to help. And in those moments, I have matched Peter, where in the scripture it said, when he saw the wind, but I would say this for us. When we saw the wind, we were afraid, and beginning to sink, we cried out, Lord, save me. Lord, save me. We all know pain and failure. Don't you? Who here hasn't failed? What I know is even the young ones know failure. We start out early in life knowing about failure, and guess what? We will know about failure to the day we die. It's just part of this broken place we live in. I don't know what golf would be like in heaven. I don't think we'll play golf there, because my guess is every time you swing the club and you hit the ball, you get a hole in one. So there'd be no fun in it. In this life, we hit the ball and it doesn't go in. It goes over there and it goes over there and it goes wherever, but it doesn't go in. And we live with this failure. The prophet Isaiah understood how God transforms, though, this failure and this pain. And he wrote about it in Isaiah 61. He said this: God comforts all who mourn and provides for those who grieve in Zion. He bestows on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. Now look at that. God provides for those who struggle instead of mourning, instead of ashes, he gives praise. Instead of despair, he gives us good things in the midst of this brokenness. So when we allow God to come into our failure and pain, we experience healing, growth, maturing. So I would say this to you today. So perhaps it's the two steps back when in desperation we call out to God that we should value more than the three steps forward. I want you to think about that a little bit. I have grown more as a Christian through failure and through struggle than I have grown through just really good, easy times. Now, I'm not saying I liked it. I'm not saying I liked it at all. But what I'm telling you is in that place, I have had to cling to God tighter. When things are going really good, it's very easy to take the focus off. When things aren't going so good, it's very easy to turn back to the one who you know is there. What I also know about this is that over the years, I've pastored into five decades of life. And in those years, I discovered that people who knew brokenness and God had worked them through that and had had difficult times, that those people often were some of the most caring and loving and kind and generous and forgiving and understanding and compassionate than those who didn't seem to have any struggle. I know that having traveled with many people and my own journey through sinful brokenness, through pain, through failure, through illness, through walking along with people in death, what I've known is that transformed me where I understand and care and have compassion like I never had when I was did not have those experiences. And I'm grateful. Doesn't mean I'd like to do it all again. I remember my first wife, who had struggled with cancer. She had three bouts with it, and the third time, the time that took her, we didn't know how serious it was when it came up, and she said this to me. I'll never forget this. She said, "I really don't want to do this again." She said, "I thought I learned enough lessons from God in this already." What she didn't know, she had other lessons to learn that would take her, but there was a lesson for me to learn. A different journey. Walking on the water. Walking on the water. So, what Peter also discovered as he met Jesus on the water was the way up often begins on the way down. Now, consider for a moment what Peter, I really love Peter. He's got a little touch of arrogance in him. He's impetuous. He can be rash. He can be outspoken. I want you to think with me for a moment. What if he had stepped out on the water that day and he'd walked with Jesus all the way to the shore? What would he have learned? My guess is he would have learned, being the rash, impetuous, a bit arrogant character that he was, that he was really something, that he was amazing, that he was Jesus's number one disciple. Nobody else gets out of the boat. Nobody else walks on the water, but I did. So look at me. I think Peter just might have come up with that. He would have missed something deep in this whole experience that he had. We can miss the truth when we read Jesus' words out of Matthew 14:31, because when Jesus rescues Peter, he says to him, "You have little faith, why did you doubt?" Now that sounds like if Peter had just kept enough faith, if he just held on enough, he could have done this. But I think we misunderstand Jesus' words, because here's the truth. Faith isn't something we work up. When faith is really reliance on God. Faith is reliance on God. Matter of fact, it was Paul in Ephesians 2:8 who says this, faith, it is a gift of God. Now, just think about that. If you need faith, I would say this to you. Don't spend a bunch of time trying to work it up. Rather spend time with God trying to let him pour it into you. Let him produce faith in you rather than you trying to produce faith. Peter had to learn really what it was. It was all about Jesus. It wasn't about him. Now, Jesus demonstrates this going down with his own life. Now, I told you, it's more about going down than coming up. Jesus took 3 steps down before he takes 2 steps up. He does in his own life, so don't you think it's probably kind of normal for us too? The first step Jesus took down was, you remember who Jesus is? He's the second person of the Trinity. He and God are one. And here you've got Jesus, creator of the universe. God, who says, let me become a child. A human child, in a dusty, basically forgotten place in the world on the edge of the Roman Empire, and let me inhabit the body of a little child. Is that not a step down? We can't even comprehend that step down. We just know it happened. But then he doesn't stop there. Then, before he starts his ministry, he takes another step down. And his step down was his baptism, where he said, I am doing this to fulfill all righteousness. But think about that. Perfect Jesus is baptized. Why? To show us the way. Did Jesus need to be baptized? I don't think so. But do we need to be? Yes. So he does this for us. Another step down. And then a final step down takes him to a criminal's cross where he allows himself, and I say that to you, he allows himself to be murdered on a cross. Down, down, down. Before he takes some steps up, which is the first being the resurrection, and the second being his ascension. And boy, do we need a resurrection, and do we need an ascension in our own lives too. Now, if you believe like I did as I was growing up, that your spiritual journey was going to be upward and linear and steady, that constant progression forward, a movement from salvation to the day you go to heaven. But instead you found it to be something quite different, filled with some sin and failure and struggle. I want you to take heart. I want you to hear this. Our walk on the water with Jesus is an up and down journey. It's filled with seasons of intimacy, growth, and joy. But it is also filled with seasons of distance and dryness and lament. Both of those things can happen during a life and will happen during a life. Yet through it all, Jesus is faithful. Through it all, he's there for us in the ups and downs. Part of that is because he absolutely fully identifies with us. Hebrews. I love Hebrews, but there's a couple of passages in Hebrews that talks specifically about this. The second chapter in the 17th verse and the fourth chapter in the 15th verse tell us this about Jesus and his understanding of us. He said in the second chapter, 17th verse, says this, "For this reason he had to be made like them." Who are them? Us. "Fully human in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in the service of God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people." He had to become like us in every way so he could carry us, so he could rescue us. And then the fourth chapter and the 15th verse goes and says this, "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weakness. But we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin." Jesus has complete empathy for us because he understands this journey. He knows all about it because everything that we experience, he experienced. By the way, there's not one thing you have been tempted with or will be tempted with in your life that he doesn't know about and hasn't endured himself, but without sin. And that's where our hope comes from. We can call out to him when we are on our way down because he understands, and we can trust in that. Now, as we reflect on Peter's walk with Jesus, this question comes to mind. And I want you to think about this today. Is this what we need to think about? What does this mean for us today? What does all of this mean? If it doesn't have some meaning, there's nothing to this. Well, above all, I think it means this. We can relax in Jesus' arms. We can quit struggling. We can relax in Jesus' arms. I have known moments of extreme loss and pain in my life where it wouldn't have mattered how much I struggled, it wasn't going to change one thing. And in those moments, all I could do, and literally curl up in a ball on the floor and imagine myself being held by Jesus. That's all. There's times we just relax in his arms. Too often we think we need to perform perfectly. We need to get it all right. And we're in the midst of struggle and pain, and we're in the midst of hardship, and something goes wrong, and we don't get it right, and we get down on ourselves, and we beat ourselves up, and some of think that, you know, God's not there for us or isn't going to be because we didn't get it right. And we act like Adam and Eve, really, because remember in the garden what happened with Adam and Eve after they sinned? Remember, the Bible says that God used to walk in the cool of the day with Adam and Eve. And so he shows up to walk. Now he knows what's going on. He knows everything's going on. He shows up that day. He's going to go for a walk with them. But he knows they're hiding. They've messed up. And what do? They hide. When we mess up, one of the mistakes we make is we hide. Instead of realizing that the most important thing we do is just go grab hold of him. Just go and grab hold, because he's there for us. Psalm 103, 13 and 14, so beautiful here, says, As a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. For he knows how we are formed. He remembers that we are dust. He knows this about us. Do you think Jesus knew that Peter wasn't going to walk on the water? Of course he did. But think about it. Jesus still called him. Come. He knew he was going to go for a dip in the water. But here's what you need to understand. Jesus is less concerned with our falling and more concerned with our calling. Calling to him. So here's what I want you to know. In this life, we will face storms. We will experience all kinds of challenges to our faith. And Jesus said this because he knew this would come. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world. That's John 16:33. He tells us you're going to have trouble in this world, but what? I'm there with you. I'm there for you. As a matter of fact, I believe this. Jesus will lead us into storms. By the way, those of you that are parents, if you are parents that want to see your children grow, you're going to let them experience failure. You're going to let them struggle. Now, I remember my daughter hated math when she was in grade school. And she's a nurse today, and she has to use math every day to get the right medication to people. And I worry about that some days. I don't anymore. But I remember she got a new teacher one year, and a teacher had a sense that this whole grade had an experimental program in math on them, and I knew my daughter couldn't do math. She'd come home, I'd work with her on it, and she couldn't do it. But she was getting great grades in school in this new program. Well, a year later, she gets a new teacher. The teacher must have thought something about this program because he tested the students, and he found out they couldn't do their math. So he flunks the whole class. I'll never forget this. She comes home in tears, wailing. I have to understand, my daughter is large in terms. She's small, but she's large in her emotions. And she came home wailing about how terrible this was. And I looked at her and said, thank God the teacher's finally doing her job. I've been telling you, you can't do your math. Failure sometimes is the best thing because it brings us up to the place where we have to acknowledge we need help. We need help. And that's exactly what Jesus does. He leads us to places where we have to call out. So here's what I say to you today. You may be facing some things. You may be facing marriage, family, or relational problems. You may be in the midst of this right now. You may have money problems that you're not sure how it's going to work out. You may be struggling with health issues. You may be going through problems at work or at school. You may be struggling with discouragement and disappointment, depression. COVID-19 and the isolation it brings may be absolute. How many of you are COVID fatigued? You know? Just tired of this. Well, guess what? It's not going away. Sure doesn't appear to be. So we're going to get more tired of it. Some of you may struggle with addictions and temptations. So here's what I need to say to you. Rather than asking, why is this happening to me? I mean, you can do that. But rather than asking me, you know, that question, do what Peter did. Call out to Jesus and say, help me. And I also want to say this to you. Sometimes when you call out to him, you may not be able to hear his voice. So what I would say to you is maybe you need to do the hardest thing that you're ever going to do in life. And this is one of the hardest things. One of the hardest things ever to do is to say to someone that you know is a little more mature, that's been down the road, that you can trust, and you say to them, I need help. I need help. And here's what I'm struggling with. Can you help me? I'm a pastor. I've been through college and seminary. I go to a church in Saskatchewan filled with farmers who won my best friend, farmer 20 years older than me, became like a father to me, has a grade 8 education. The wisest one to this day, he's in his 80s, one of the wisest men I know. And I remember going to him and saying, I'm struggling with some issues. I'm the guy who's been through seminary. I'm the pastor. I go to this man with a grade 8 education. I say, I'm struggling. I'm struggling in my walk. I'm struggling with some issues. And he puts his arm around me, and he walked with me and gave me great counsel. And I heard the voice of God through him. And if I had a struggle today that I thought I could call him, he would be there today for me. Satan wants to keep you from reaching out. Now, as I said at the start, you remember I told you that our spiritual journey is not linear. It's not a steady progression from the moment of salvation to the time we step into heaven. It's a ride in the dark on the waves. Out there walking on the waves in the dark. And the wind's blowing and the spray's in your face. And there's one moment where you're riding high and the next moment you're down in a trough and you feel the waves coming over and you think you're going to sink for good. But in that place of desperation, we discover that we are not alone. Jesus promised us in John 14, 18, he said this, I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you. At the close, let me share this with you. There's a theologian and philosopher named Teilhard de Chardin, and he said something one time that I read about that I thought, this is so good. And it's so contrary to what I grew up with. He said, above all, trust in the slow work of God. Above all, trust in the slow work of God. We need to remember Paul said something about this in Philippians 1:6. He who began a good work in you, what's he say? You'll carry it on to completion until the day of Jesus Christ. That verse does not say, he who began a good work in you today will complete it today. Doesn't say that. It says, he who began a good work will keep on at it and keep on and keep on as long as you're breathing air. He's going to keep at it. I take great encouragement in that. Because here's what I know. More than anything else, this is what God wants. He wants an intimate relationship with me. And it doesn't matter if I'm struggling, stumbling, falling, whatever. He wants me to cling to him. Now, would he like me to be perfect? Absolutely. But he knows what I'm made of. And he knows I'm capable of stupidity. I'm just telling you that. You can talk to Angela. She will confirm that. I want to just tell you this last thing. God is silent sometimes. And I've been telling you to reach out to him. But I will tell you, God is silent sometimes. In my first 10 years in ministry, I had a two-year... I'm in Swift Current, Saskatchewan. I have a two-year period of time where when I prayed, I could not sense, feel, hear the voice of God. For 2 years, every Sunday I'm preaching. And for 2 years, I do not feel like God is even there. But here's what I knew. I knew he was. whether I felt it or not. And that two-year experience was life-transforming for me because he got through my head. It wasn't about me feeling something. It was about me knowing, 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 knowing. Now, at the end of that 2 years, I had an experience with God that was so profoundly emotional, it transformed me in the church. That 2 years was a long time. And since then, I can just tell you this now, I might change that tomorrow, but from that time, all those years ago to today, I always have a sense of God with me. Because he's there. The silence is gone. Now, on the other hand, he doesn't always tell me what I want to know today. But what I know is I can walk with him and he is there and he will be there. And I hope you know that for yourselves. No matter what you're going through, where you're going, whatever's happening, I hope you know that when he calls you and says, come, and you step out, he's going to catch you and you'll be fine.